Hi everyone, today we're talking about hypergrowth. If you Google examples of hypergrowth companies, some of the first names you'll see are Uber and Revolut. For this reason, and because I think she's a fascinating product leader, I spoke with Irina Scarwat, who was the global head of growth at Revolut until March 2021, and she also led Uber's growth in Romania until 2018. Here's her recipe for achieving hypergrowth. Enjoy this episode and don't forget to subscribe to our channel wherever you're watching or listening.
Welcome to The Product Show, insightful interviews with founders and tech leaders sharing how they hack product growth.
Hi, Irina. Welcome to The Product Show.
Hi, Desi. Thanks a lot for inviting me and for having me here.
I started The Product Show with the idea of speaking to founders and product people who are involved in the early days of growing a company to discuss the strategies and the tactics they use in the very beginning. So I'm really excited about our conversation because this is exactly your domain. Uber and Revolut might be big companies now, but when you started there, the markets you had to grow were tiny. So tell us a little bit about your background, your professional journey so far, and how are you doing on your sabbatical?
So I started my career years back. I started in consultancy. I worked for 2 years in consultancy. Then during my master's studies, I got involved. I did a master's abroad in Oslo and Paris, and I got involved in entrepreneurship in volunteering for different organizations. So as soon as I got back home, I started my own nonprofit, which I led for 5 years. We were doing entrepreneurship education programs for the youth. In parallel, I've built a marketing agency working with tech startups. And I was working more on customer discovery and validation and go-to-market product market fit than actual marketing and go-to-market strategies back in the day. Then I've joined for 5 years the teams of How to Web and Tech Hub Bucharest, where I've switched from being a service provider for tech startups to being a catalyst for the tech ecosystem. And when I've learned and grown enough, I wanted to make the switch towards product marketing. So I first joined Uber as the first marketing hire, local marketing hire. We launched 3 cities. We grew the market to 1 million users locally. But at some point with Uber changing leadership, going through IPO preps, things became very corporate. So I wanted to go on a sabbatical and I never ended up taking one because I was approached by Revolut. And I've decided to join them. I joined initially as country manager for Romania. We had 20,000 users back then. Now we're approaching 1.5 million. 8 months into the role, we've started brainstorming about org structures that would allow us to further grow and reach our true potential in the markets where we operate. And this is how we came up with the idea of building a growth department. And I ended up leading what we called our growth machine, which is basically a fancy name for our efforts of building growth teams in Europe and in our expansion markets. Then I was promoted to lead the CE region. And last but not least, I was promoted to lead the global growth department. It's been an amazing journey. The past 3 years have been amazing. But at some point, I felt that the learnings that I get, the impact that I have now at Revolut is rather incremental than exponential as it used to be. And I'm also really tired. And I think that people working in high growth companies and in startups can relate. 1 year feels like a dog years. I don't feel like I've been at Revolut for 3 years, but for tens of years. I really needed a break. So I've decided to go on the sabbatical that I've been planning for my entire career and never took one. So here we are 2 weeks into my sabbatical. I still have plenty of calls. I still have plenty of emails. I started learning different programs, but it feels good.
Right, so let's go back to those early days at Revolut. When you started, the Romanian market had around 20,000 users, so your task was to grow it to 100,000 in 8 months with no marketing budget. So tell us a bit more about how you spent the first few months at the job. How did you decide what to focus on? You know, how did you identify the strategies that were going to move the needle?
So when I joined Revolut, was approaching 1 million users globally, and in Romania we had 20,000 users, and those were the early adopters, the innovators, the people in the tech community that were familiar with the product from tech conferences. It wasn't easy. The initial growth that we have was purely product driven growth. So Romanians started using Revolut because the product was much better than an existing alternative. Product driven growth can only take you so far. So what I did, given that we didn't have any budget and I didn't have any local team at that point, was to focus on building a sound layer of community-driven growth. So I pushed a lot on inbound marketing, on content, on user education. I leveraged the power of the community. We had the active users of Revolut were ambassadors for the program. Revolut was a love brand for them. So I invested a lot of efforts in building a strong community around the product, in keeping in touch with our brand evangelists, in hearing them whenever they had feedback for us, and this turned them into our biggest promoters and into a major growth lever for us that later on created network effects. We worked on closing strategic partnerships. We focused a lot on communications. We went to a lot of events, and all this in order to first build a strong community around the product, secondly, and equally important, to build trust to position Revolut as a fintech thought leader in Romania.
Right. And from all the campaigns and projects that you just mentioned, which are the ones that brought the biggest impact and you're most proud of? Can you recall any examples?
There were a lot. I'm a firm believer in the butterfly effect. I think that with experimentation, constant experimentation, and by doing small tweaks here and there, you can get very, very strong results. So I don't know, one of the most impactful, there were two things that we did, two big campaigns that are very close to my heart. So one of them was a Rough Rally tour. So basically I embarked on a journey picking the cities in Romania with the biggest communities of Revolut users. I organized events in order to meet with these users. What I did differently, as opposed to how we were doing things back then, was that I instead of inviting to those events just our most active users, I kept those events open to the public because this was going to later on create network effects. You'd speak in front of a room, half of it are active users of your product and evangelists, half of them are just interested in finding out more. At the end of the event, you're not going to be the only one answering questions about the product. Half of your room is. And this actually got the ball rolling. And then one other thing back then, we had the possibility of offering users when signing up the first card for free. In order to do that, they had to sign up at a specific promo link. And again, I did a very small tweak. I said, I don't want my users to get the first card order for free only if they sign up at the promo link. Because this means that we're going to create a lot of business debt for the customer support teams. There are going to be people that are just going to download the app and then they're no longer going to be eligible for the card, and this creates a barrier to growth. How about we just change the pricing for the first card order in app to zero for 5 days straight? Just give me 5 days to test it out. And we were 75,000 users by then, and we acquired 25,000 users, the remaining until 100,000 over the next 5 days, because it went viral online. So it's Basically looking at the low-hanging fruits, the playbooks, looking at what your colleagues did, and just doing small tweaks in order to improve and to get exponential results.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Sometimes the small tweaks can bring bigger results rather
we
than...
try to look at very creative ideas. We try to look at very bold things. But if we look at the very simple things first, we might be amazed at the result that we can deliver. Back then, I'll never forget that back then it was the first time in Revolut's history when a market was growing faster than the UK. And you're comparing a market that 3x, 4x smaller in size than the UK, and that with no budget, just by looking at how to you can improve what you're already doing.
In the product and design community, we love talking about product-led growth. And I also believe that's the only sustainable growth strategy, really, growing through your product. But it feels like our trendy obsession with product-led growth has somehow demonized marketing-driven growth. But we have to be using them together, right? I mean, we have to be thinking about the top of the funnel as well, especially when it comes to new products and new markets. So how do we make sure that these two are aligned and we are striking that balance right to achieve hyper growth?
Yeah, so let's take them in turns. So first, with growth, I feel oftentimes that growth is a buzzword nowadays. And if you ask 10 persons what growth is, you're going to get 10 different answers from the mere simplistic definition of growth as performance marketing. So everything that's paid marketing is growth. Growth managers, heads of growth are in fact digital marketing managers or paid marketing managers, to different variations along the theme. For me, growth equals marketing. For me, growth is marketing all along the funnel, from building brand awareness to top of the funnel user acquisition, conversion, and further down the funnel engagement, retention of your users. So that's how I define growth. Secondly, I think that we're putting in the same time too much and too little emphasis on product-led growth. Product-led growth is not the only growth strategy. Product-led growth shouldn't be the only growth strategy, but it should be the first growth strategy. So you can't, if you, pardon my very open language, if you have a shitty product, no matter how much money you're going to pour into it, it's still going to be a shitty product at the end of the day. And even if you're going to pay money to acquire your users, you're not going to retain those users, so you don't have a business. So product-led strategy is instrumental and is the first thing that that you have to do as a startup. Focus on your product. Make sure that your product is good. Make sure that the product stickiness is high. You're doing this right. You're doing the product-driven growth stage right. When you see that the number of your users grows organically week over week without paying money for it. When you see that users are referring your product without any incentives, because it's very easy to say, okay, I give you 100 euros if you bring me a user, and then you're going to find users to refer your product. If you want to validate that you're doing it right and that your product it's right in the product-led growth stage, non-incentivized referrals should work. You should see high product stickiness. You should also see that your users are voting with their wallet, so they are actually paying for your product because they see the value that your product brings. And you should see that your users are engaged. They are willing to talk to you. They are willing to give you feedback. They are willing to criticize you. When your users criticize you, that's a very good thing. This means that they care. So the product-led growth stage is super important, and product should be at the center of any high growth strategy. But one thing that the product and marketing has to figure out has to understand is that product can't take you to being a unicorn. Product alone can't take you to millions of users, because it doesn't work like that. A very good product and a very sound product is going to create an initial an initial virality, but just in the communities of early adopters, of innovators and early adopters. You're not going to go past that point without pushing forward. The problem, in my view, is that we're rushing into marketing-driven growth and we're forgetting the chain in the middle. And that's why I see a lot of companies failing with their commercials. And that point, it's actually community-driven growth. So from product-led growth, where you're using your product as a growth factor, in community-driven growth, you're using your community, your users as a growth factor. Because if you did product growth right, and you did it right, you're going to be able to unlock the next wave of growth, which is community-driven growth. And here there are various ways to do it with no or very little budget. You should focus on inbound marketing. You should focus on thought leadership, community events, strategic partnerships, media and communications. All these things, they aren't free. Anything is free. Even if you hire a person to handle all these, you're still paying for it. But they don't require massive investments. And only then, only afterwards, this creates the basis for the network effects. And this creates the basis for the exponential growth, for turning your company into unicorn. If you have the product-led foundation, if you have the community-driven growth stage down right, you can then switch to marketing-driven growth, where you should still, of course, focus on the customer, but you can experiment with cross-channel marketing campaigns, with outbound marketing, ATL, endorsements, you name it.
Amazing. This was like the growth strategy playbook. Thank you very much for sharing. So let's talk a little bit more about the difference between created accounts and real users. And you just touched base on that earlier. Activation and retention can sometimes be masked by aggressive acquisition campaigns and mind-blowing new accounts numbers. But we all know there is a huge difference there. This is a very common trend for fast-growing startups. And unfortunately, many young startups, smaller startups without big fundings, copy-paste that without realizing the long-term implications. Have you experienced this challenge and how did you tackle it?
So it's normal to communicate the sign up numbers. I don't even want to talk about app downloads. So it depends if you're looking for substance or if you're looking for vanity indicators. I'd always advise look for substance. So your North Star metric can't be signups, because signups in themselves don't mean anything at all. So your North Star metric can only be the active users. Your North Star metric can only be the revenue generated by those active users, the revenue per user or the gross profit per user, you name it. If you want to have a sustainable company, it's true that in the beginning for early stage founders, it's super important to acquire users. But even then, and even when your KPI is signups, forget about app downloads, please forget. Just for the sake of it, don't bring them into conversation. So even if your objective initially is to drive top of the funnel user acquisition, you should still follow the journey of those users further down the funnel, high drops in conversion rates might mean that you have a product issue that you need to solve. High drops in retention mean that your product is not solving the problem you think it's solving for your users, or your users don't perceive the value. So you should always look holistically throughout the funnel, and not just at simple parts of the funnel. I think this holds true the other way around as well. Because if you only look at the number of active users, and those are constant, you have to look, okay, you can bring active users two ways, top down or bottom up. Top down by top of the funnel user acquisition, bottom up by doing churn prevention activities, by avoiding let your users become dormant. You have to balance both ways. Focusing on only one side, it's wrong, irrespective of which one.
So who do you think are the victims of hypergrowth? What are the usual sacrifices and trade-offs that we have to make to achieve those numbers? Especially when it comes to the product, we're going to talk about teams later.
So I don't think you should make trade-offs in terms of product. So I'd rather keep the product simple. I'd rather keep the product with fewer features. I'd rather keep the product very, if you make trade-offs in terms of product, you're sacrificing growth. All the companies that have achieved hypergrowth have achieved hypergrowth on the basis of a very, very good product. Making sacrifices or trade-offs in terms of product quality is completely contradictory to having hypergrowth. What you need to do, though, as a product person is to prioritize correctly, is to understand what's the main problem that your product is solving for the users, and prioritizing to keep a limited set of features in the product that actually caters to those users' needs. Everything else is noise. You have to keep those features intact and flawless and with a perfect UX for your users. Everything you add on top of that can be deprioritized, but you have to dedicate all your resources toward the core product features if you want to achieve hypergrowth.
So I guess a huge part of your success as a growth leader is having the right people and the right team structure around you. At Uber and Revolut, you had to grow the teams from just a handful of people. What was the right growth team model that worked for you, especially given the fact that you had to manage distributed teams across Europe? And what were the challenges?
So there are two things here. First, on the team structure, I'm very sorry to say this, but the true answer is that there is no correct answer. There's no such thing as the right team structure for the growth team. There's only the right growth team structure for your company. The team structure that we had at Uber is different than the team structure that we had at Revolut, and both of them might completely fail for another startup. I think it's very important when deciding how to structure your team. I have a couple of very basic principles. So first, you start from the goal. You start from the KPI. What's the KPI that team has to achieve? So here is the KPI. What's the profiles of people that you need in order to achieve those KPIs? And then always start small with the team. I feel that oftentimes startup founders, particularly in the early stages, are not aware of the impact that they have on humans' life. It's a huge responsibility to hire a person. You only hire them if you need them. So I'm a firm believer in minimum viable teams, in lean teams. So start small. Start with a small team. Hire 2-3 people, depending on the profiles, and then start scaling the team as you see a competency gap. You need a different competency that you don't currently have in the team, an overload problem when people in your team can no longer deliver more because they're swamped, and then you have to bring because they risk to become swamped. Don't wait for them to become swamped. Don't burn them out. That's another mistake that oftentimes startup founders make. So just hire lean, hire when you need more competencies, or hire when you need more bandwidth in the team and more people. But don't hire just for the sake of hiring. And a big mistake that you can do is to put the team that you want to hire in an Excel sheet and start hiring without looking at the goals first, at the competencies first, at the skill set that's already in your team now.
I watched a few videos of you, and I also read some of your articles. So I think it's fair to say that, or just maybe to give a little bit of context to our listeners and viewers, you have 3 master degrees. You started your career in marketing with 0 experience by cold emailing the right people. So I think it's fair to say that a huge part of your professional success and what you've achieved for the companies you worked for is down to your personality, your determination, your drive to get things done, your hunger for challenges. Is that what it takes to be successful at a fast-growing company, fast-growing tech company? And also, I read an article where you defend Revolut and the bad press they're getting, where you're basically saying it's you who decided to work weekends and nights. No one made you do that. You wanted to do it to achieve the results, to get things done, to prove it to yourself, to deliver for your team. So basically, this is a sort of a profile that these fast-growing companies attract rather than this culture being imposed on them. So what does it take to work at a fast-growing company?
So I think there's one thing that helps you succeed or that transcends everything from ambition and drive and getting things done, and that's passion. That's being passionate about what you do. The reason why in high growth companies and in startups in general, people are working long hours or are working overtime is not because somebody ties them to the chair. It's because they actually care about the work they are doing. Is that they're very passionate. And with this passion comes the drive, comes the ambition. Comes the creativity, comes the desire to do more. It all starts from passion. I was talking earlier with a student that I'm mentoring, and she was telling me that she found a dream job, but she's not passionate about the industry at all. And I told her, it's not the dream job then, because in the end there are two things when choosing to work for a company. It's the product you're working on and it's the people you're working on. If you don't understand the product, if you're not passionate about the product, it simply won't work. It's going to be just the job. And in startups and in tech, it's never just a job.
What qualities were you looking for when hiring people for your team? Is it this drive and determination and passion that you just mentioned, or is there more to that? How do you have people like you, basically?
So I think it depends a lot. First, I don't aim to hire people that are just like me because I like to have a diverse team, diverse perspectives. I like to have in my team, I'm an extrovert. I talk a lot. I want to have both extroverts and introverts in the team. And I'm working really hard in order to make sure that introverts in my team always get to have a say at the table. So I think it's very important beyond competence. I mean, you have a clear set of competencies that you want to hire for. It depends on the position, but beyond the competencies and the skills, it's always about the attitude. I don't know, there are, for example, in my interviews, and I said that I'm going to write about it, and I am going to, there are two questions that I always ask people during my interviews and for my team. One of them is, what book are you reading now? One other thing is, what's one key thing that you've learned over the past year? Because if they aren't reading and if they haven't learned anything over the past year, it's clear that they aren't looking to learn continuously. So it's much easier. And there are questions that you ask and you read between the lines. I'm always hiring for attitude. I want people with that's a quote from Harvey Specter from Suits. I hate negative people. They have a problem for every solution. I don't need that kind of negativity in my team. I want people that are driven, that are entrepreneurial, that are good problem solvers. I like people that for more senior positions that can do the strategy, but I'm not hiring the type of managers that sit back, do the strategy and have a bunch of minions implementing the strategy. I want my managers to be able to roll up their sleeves and execute along with the team as well. And I think there are more and more people like this. And I think that as long as you lead by example, and as long as you have clear expectations from your team, things are going well.
What do you think is the secret to sustainable product growth? Is it the people who surround you? And what is it more to that?
So it's the people, and when I say people, it's the team behind the product and it's the users of the product. Because if you lose sight of any of the two, you're going to mess up the product sooner rather than later.
What's next for you then?
So that's a very good question. I haven't decided yet. I'm exploring several alternatives. So I will either join another startup in order to help them scale and build their teams and the marketing growth strategy to help them succeed. Or I will launch my own startup, or I would just work in an advisory role with a bunch of smaller, more early stage startups. That's still to be seen. I'm still considering my options. I'm not in a hurry, and I really want to stay for a bit. For now, what's next for me is spending time with my kid in our backyard. It's reading a lot. I've already signed up for a couple of online certifications, online courses that I want to take. It's reading, learning, binge watching, spending time with my family. And I'm sure that very good ideas and very good opportunities will arise like this.
Sounds amazing. And before I let you go, Irina, tell me, what's your advice to people who are just starting in the industry? They want to grow in the growth and product management space, and they don't know where to start from. How should they spend the first few months after university?
Start from summer. Going around in circle doesn't help. So just start from summer. Read whatever you can find. Do courses online. Spend money on courses only if you're convinced that those courses are good and they're right for you. And there are a lot of very good courses available out there. And intern, volunteer in order to get a grasp of how things are. And if you join a company as an intern and you exceed expectations and you prove that you deliver, you're definitely going to grow.
The Product Show is brought to you by Pony, a design studio helping startups and scale-ups build and optimize their digital products at speed. Check pony.studio to learn more.